Hi there, you're listening to the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Holmshaw. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to our podcast today. Whether this is your first time listening or if you have been a regular fan of the podcast for the last 8 months, we thank you so much for taking the time to check out our platform and listen to us today. So in today's episode, I was joined by Beth Curzon, who is a professional football player currently playing in Bulgaria. And as you've seen by the topic title of today's episode, we discussed two topics really within one episode. The first being an insight into Beth's experiences within youth development. Beth actually spent a lot of time playing within all boys teams in her youth, and what I've always found particularly interesting to then an all girls team. So we discussed that, and Beth shared with us her experiences and if she felt that had an impact on her game. The second topic we discuss if players within the women's game have a preference on coach gender. As you know, the women's game is unique where it has both female and male coaches. And again, me being a male manager within the women's game at the minute, it's something that's always sparked my interest and something I've always wondered if that does have an effect. So it was really fascinating for me to gain some of Beth's insights from her experience and if players actually do have a preference on coach gender or if it's just the cultural norm that they've experienced their whole careers. So here's a brief preview of what you can expect in today's episode.
And then when I joined a girls team, it was, like you mentioned, it was different because, not because they were boys, but because they had more opportunity and more exposure to the game. So I didn't benefit from it because they were boys. I benefited because they had been exposed to football from birth and the girls hadn't. So some of the girls I played with were very good, but they'd been playing for 6 months. So I had developed from the boys game in that respect because I'd been playing for longer, and that was the difference. I think that's what people don't pick up as much. It's difference in exposure and opportunity, not because they're boys.
So my thanks again to Beth for coming onto the podcast today. It's a fantastic listen. If you like the podcast, as always, please do leave us a review on any of our platforms. And we hope you enjoy today's episode.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
I'm Beth Curzon, and you're listening to the Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Okay, welcome back to the Sports Coaching Podcast with me, Sam Holmshaw. As always, we hope everyone is keeping well in this strange and difficult time that seems to be never ending at the minute. But back with another podcast today, and I am absolutely delighted to welcome Beth Curzon. Beth, hope I pronounced the surname correctly. I've just had a brief chat off air, but how are you? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I hope you're well.
Yeah, not too bad. I guess the question I always ask everyone is, how's this COVID period been for you? Managed to get through it okay?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I've been trying to keep busy, keep healthy. I've just kind of been doing lots of workouts at home, been going on runs and walks and things like that. So fingers crossed everything will get back to normal soon because I'm definitely missing it.
Yeah, 100%. So, Beth, delighted to have you. First footballer we've actually had on the podcast. We normally have coaches, so that's a fantastic professional footballer, I should say. I'm gonna try and pronounce it, Beth. I know we've just had a chat off there, but FC Pirin Blagoevgrad. I think I've completely messed it up, so I'll let
it's
you.
It's not far off.
Pirin Blagoevgrad. There we go. Finally got there. So yeah, I mean, fantastic to have you on. It's great to talk to you and connect. So.
Thank you.
What we normally do at this podcast is we normally would ask the guests about this coaching background, but I think obviously appropriate for you to ask you about your playing background. So if you don't mind, I suppose from the beginning, just give us an overview of your journey and what's led you to where you are today.
Sure. So I grew up when I was little, always had a football in my hand, little football. My dad played for the Notts County youth team, Basford United, Eastwood, that kind of thing. My mum grew up with six brothers, so she was very good at football as well. and she played with all them. So I've always been playing football and played in the garden with my mum and stuff like that.
So when I was about 6 or 7, I began playing football on the field and the playground with the school, with all the boys in my classes and things. And it was my caretaker at the time of the school also championed girls football. And he said to me, look, you're really good. You need to join a team outside of school. And I know there's not many around for girls. So why don't you join the boys team that with the boys that you play with at school? And so that's what I did. And I played with them until I was about 11.
And then I joined a Sunday team with the girls. So I played Saturday, Sunday and for the school. Carried on that way for a while until I had to leave because that was the FA rules. Joined I think another West Bridgeford side, that kind of thing. Went through Sherwood, Netherfield. When I was 16, then transitioned from, well, under 16s to, we went straight to women's football. And that was obviously a big change. And then I think in 2018 was when I joined Notts County, having played for Eastwood Town. Played them for 2 years, joined Burton Albion, and then within a couple of months I was off playing for Pirin in Bulgaria. So that's kind of the story. It's quite the last year or so I've had three clubs. I'd just signed for Burton, and I got called within 4 days. I was like, yeah, I'm off. Packed my life in a suitcase. It was a tough one, but exciting nonetheless.
Fantastic. So I suppose, and you know, without getting into today's topic, we're going to save it for later. But you know, what was it like, sort of growing up and playing in an all boys team? I'd be very intrigued. You know, what that experience was like for you.
To be honest, I didn't know any different. I'd done it for so long, and I'd done it on the playground, that I actually didn't see much of a difference. To be honest, it was only until I left the boys team I started to be treated differently actually in football. And I thought, hang on a minute. I mean, I got a few comments and stuff actually. Not from the boys, but from the dads. Not on my team, but you know, we'd play a bit of a rough side. And I remember one time really vividly, we were 2-0 up, playing really well. It was freezing, and this one kid, I think it was like a centre mid, was on me all game. I think I was about 11 at this point. It's just before I left, and his dad was like, "She's a girl. Like you can't let her beat you." And he was like, "Take her out." And he absolutely, both feet, took me out. I scraped all my legs. I was trying not to cry. Just past the halfway line, and then I went and scored from the free kick. So I thought, that teaches you, doesn't it? So it was, I mean, I have some really good memories growing up, and I used to score a lot in the training sessions and stuff. So I was really close with them, and I'm actually good friends still with a lot of the boys that play, or used to play. So overall, it was a really good experience for me, and it was different to the girls' team I played for. But I really enjoyed my time there, yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. Thanks, sir. Thanks for sharing, and I guess the question I've got, Ash, is, you know, what's it like becoming a professional? I believe that kind of happened to you within the last year, is that right?
Yeah, so literally in October, we basically got contacted by an agent who I'm now with that agency, and with a different agent, and I speak to the guy that helped me get out there as well. And he said, I'm aware of, like, you as a player, footage-wise and stuff, I've seen, but are you interested in this opportunity in Europe? And I was like, well, of course, because I'm not playing here at the moment, you know, with COVID and stuff as well. And I was like, sure thing. Within a couple of days, I was on the phone to the manager. He'd seen my footage, was like, you're great. He's a British manager, which helped a lot with language. And it was literally, I remember on Thursday, we had a call and he said, can you come out by the weekend? And I said, I don't think I can, actually. I can't put my life up that fast. I've got a car and everything. So I said, well, Monday then. And I flew out on the Monday. So it was a bit of a whirlwind, really. Literally happened over a course of a week or so. So, that's the story of how I became a professional player, which is very exciting.
Fantastic. And I suppose, you know, sort of moving out to Bulgaria, I mean, you know, what was that like, especially in a COVID world? I mean, it must have been fascinating.
It was really intimidating, to be honest. The first thing I noticed when I got on the plane was everyone was Bulgarian, and I didn't realise how much of they love coming to England.
Yeah.
So I think I was the only British person on the flight, to be honest. So I couldn't really converse with anybody. Obviously, all wearing masks and things, so it's the first time I've travelled during COVID, so it was quite daunting. Landed, and then it was crazy to realize they had no restrictions at all in place when I landed, and I was like, what is going on? They had a huge lockdown in March, and it worked quite well until it began growing again later in the year. But yeah, I went, got there, I think stayed the night because got there quite late. Next morning was up in the clubhouse, spoke for about 5 hours with the coach about like the policies, the club procedures, kind of the ethics and all that kind of thing. And then that evening I did a strength and conditioning and then video analysis and joined in with them all. And that was the taster. And I thought, oh my goodness. Next day I was training already. But I mean, it was, when people think of Bulgaria, you know, you think of Varna and the nice beach and stuff like this. It's right by Macedonia, Blagoevgrad is. So it was a very, very classically Bulgarian town. Barely anyone spoke English, so I had to pick it up quite quickly, and it's a very tough language. Yeah. But you know, a couple of the girls were quite fluent, which was really nice, and they did really try. And nice people, so I actually really enjoyed it there.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, it was really
good. I mean, and it always interests me as well when, you know, English players go abroad. I mean, how do you, you mentioned there, I suppose a few spoke English, but that language barrier, how do you, you know, sort of just communicate and get in and feel comfortable enough, you know, to like actually play with those players? I mean, is it just the language of football, or how does that work?
I did struggle with that, to be honest. Initially, it took me a good few weeks to properly settle in, to be honest. I wasn't playing my best, and I can now understand what players mean. You know, fan side of football and player side are two very different things. I mean, I support Notts, I love Notts County. And you know, I see fans on Twitter giving grief to some players that have just come in or flown in from France and things, and I think it's not all fun and games. You know, language is different, city's different, everything's different. So one thing that was good was our goalkeeper is Scottish, and I'm best friends with her now, and she was my roommate. So that was like a lifesaver as well, because she'd already been there a few months. So had some relationships with the players, and the coach was British, so he would coach in English, and one of the girls that was fluent in English would then translate to English, so it took twice as long to do everything. But I don't know, I think it got in my head, you know, even doing the drills, I would get confused. And I thought, and it's just been told to me in English, but I thought there was such, you know, and I was trying to learn the language, and other people, I'm new, so they're trying to have a bit of, you know, banter and stuff. But I you know, I picked up the basics, but the style of play is known to be very different as well. They're very institutionalized in that it's kind of our way or no way, kind of. It's the long ball, they like that. Even the men's side like that. And Warren Feeney actually is the men's manager. And he's British, so yeah, it was tough. Sometimes I play the ball through expecting a player to be there, and they just weren't, and I thought, oh, I look awful here. But it was quite a fast pace. We had a few Bulgarian internationals, like national players as well.
So a culture basically of you have to fit in playing this way or see you later, then is that what it was?
It was, yeah. I mean, that's when I first landed. I thought, that is, the coach warned me, and he said, look, I've been here for a few months now, and I'm trying to change the mindset. They're not too keen on that. But it started to work, and he very much wanted, he loved Liverpool, and he liked the quick passing, 1-2s, quick movement, you know, outside feet, that kind of thing, which is my kind of football. But when there's two sides of the spectrum going on, I've got to fit in somewhere in between. Eventually it was absolutely fine. I made my debut, and I was really happy. I nearly scored and assisted two in like 4 minutes. Wow. So it was working, whatever was happening, but it was tough to settle in after 30 weeks.
I imagine. Well, I have to say I'm absolutely fascinated. You know, cultures and within clubs always fascinates me anyway as a coach, so really interesting. And yeah, I mean, my final question, I suppose, if that really fascinates me, that the coach was you know, talking in English. Well, I suppose you always imagined that they would try and pick up the language, but then again, like you say, Bulgarian, you know, what a difficult language. I can't even imagine that. So was it football words, or was it like in detailed English, and those Bulgarian players had to just try and figure out, you know, from the translation? Or I mean, very difficult.
To be honest, he spoke he spoke quite detailed English, to be honest, because, you know, half the time I was like, they, you know, but so a girl called Ekaterina was very fluent. She had a sister that lives in London that speaks fluent English. She probably became one of my closest Bulgarian friends. So she really could translate most things. There was a few things she was like, what are you saying? And sometimes he'd kind of try and lower it. I mean, the problem did come eventually. The British manager was released when I was there. So then came the problem of, we did then get an assistant and manager take over. Yeah. There's still the managers there, but they were completely Bulgarian. So then obviously me and my roommate were like, oh, okay, now we're on the other end of this. So we'll see how this goes. And that was a big change too, actually. But at that point, I knew people well enough, you know, so they were trying to help me out as well. But that was tough, yeah.
Oh, I've got to say, fascinating. And thank you so much for sharing your journey and giving us an insight. Really interesting from my perspective. So thank you very much.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
So just before we move on to the next segment, just a little chance for me to promote some of the other projects I'm currently involved in. As some of you might have seen, I've just recently set up my own coaching shop. And within this shop, I will be creating coaching resources that include, specifically for the time being, certain how-to guides and session plans. As you may have noticed, currently listed on my shop is a how to create a game model as part of one of the how to guides I have recently created. And there's currently three PDF packages. Package one is a step-by-step guide into creating a mental model into your sport. Package two is a step-by-step guide into creating a game model into your sport. And finally, package three is a step-by-step guide to contextualize your game model to your coaching context. So all three packages are available to purchase on the shop right now. You can buy my package for a small fee of 32 great British pounds, whatever that might translate to, whatever, you know, country you're from listening to the podcast today. If you are interested, please do go and check out my shop, which is samholmshaw.com/shop/. Thank you very much, and back to the episode.
So yeah, I guess that leads us on very nicely to today's topic then. So we decided today's topic was going to be around a player's experiences on youth development and an insight on if coach gender makes a difference within the women's game. Now, two topics for me within the women's game at the minute, I've always found fascinating. I find it really interesting that maybe that's something that's actually quite unique to women's football, particularly at this moment in time. So Beth, I'm really looking forward to hearing your experiences here from your insight as a player. So if we immediately move on to the first segment then, so experiences of youth development. So I know I briefly asked you into introduction there, but growing up in playing in a boys team, I suppose, how is that, did that present any challenges? I know we briefly spoke about the player's daddy was telling that, but what other challenges kind of came from that?
So I never had too much trouble with playing alongside the boys that I did. I was always really good friends with them, always growing up with them and played for the team, you know. My mum was friends with their mums, that kind of thing. So I never really got any grief from within my own team, which was really good, really, because I can't say the same for some other girls that grew up playing in boys' teams that I know.
The only time I think I really did was when I first joined, initially, which is quite common, you hear a lot of girls that played in boys teams, was the whole passing. I didn't get passed to as much, and I thought, what is going on, because you don't do this when I'm on the playground. And then they kind of sort of, you know, warming up to the idea that I was there and I was part of their team and stuff and I could help them. And then I think the second time was an end of season award ceremony they did from like under sixes to seniors, men's, on the same night, and I was literally the only girl and about 300 men, boys and men, and that was really intimidating. And I suddenly thought that, so it's not the norm, like it's always been the norm to me. I've never felt any different. And then I stood there, you know, in my little skirt and holding my little trophy, and I thought, oh my goodness. But I still have fond memories of that night and stuff. But yeah, you know, And I was always treated differently when I said I played for the boys team and stuff. Lots of people would be like, oh, you know, it's a shock. Within my team was fine, but I did get a few comments here and there. But I brushed them off quite well when I was younger. But I didn't have any horrendous experiences and things, which was actually nice because some people have completely the opposite. And it's got worse as I got older, I noticed. It's as soon as I left boys football that things took a turn. Mm-hmm. Not while I was playing with them, which is very interesting, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is, because I can remember managing junior football teams when, you know, when I was like 18, 19, managed the under-10s, under-11s team. And we actually had a girl play for us, and I absolutely loved it. You know, she was such a great kid, and she was a fantastic player. And her dad always used to say to me, you know, the reason that she plays in a boys team because there's just not the opportunities for girls or at that particular time, about 5 or 6 years ago. So
yeah,
that was fantastic for me. I thought it was brilliant, and I always welcomed it. But, you know, when we come across junior team, you'd naturally get the opposition players. Obviously, they were only young lads, so they were like, oh, it's a girl, you know, and all this sort of stuff. But what always really shocked me was the parents. Oh, it's a girl. And, you know, I just, you'd hear stuff and you just think, that's just not right. That's I know it's the boys' game, but what? But you know, is football not all about being, you know, being inclusive and all that sort of stuff? And to me, that was just, I suppose for me, that's when I began to really understand the sort of difficulties of what it's like, you know, with being a female playing football. It's there's a lot of challenges that come through that. So for me, I mean, that always just completely shocked
it's
me.
It's baffling, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I just, I don't know. I mean, you know, I suppose when you were growing up, I suppose it's probably different to what it is now, but were there not all girls teams back then? Was it just the opportunity to play in the boys team?
I think after about a year, I joined a girls team on a Sunday. But for the time being, when I first joined boys, I was just playing for the boys only. But yeah, I mean, and then when I joined a girls team, it was, like you mentioned, it was different because, not because they were boys, but because they had more opportunity and more exposure to the game. So I didn't benefit from it because they were boys. I benefited because they had been exposed to football from birth and the girls hadn't. So some of the girls I played with were very good, but they'd been playing for 6 months. So I had developed from the boys game in that respect because I'd been playing for longer, and that was the difference. I think that's what people don't pick up as much. It's difference in exposure and opportunity, not because they're boys, and especially at that age, I didn't stand out as a girl physically, or I wasn't any worse, or I couldn't do a skill because I was a girl. It was just that they had been exposed more to the game and had played 5 years instead of 3 months. So that was the difference.
Yeah. I mean, that is fascinating, because that was the biggest thing I noticed sort of stepping into women's football. And I was at the bottom of the amateur level, coaching at an amateur club, but we had a mix of players, you know, at first team level. We'd had a mix that had played before, and then we had loads that were just completely new to the game. Now, it's not that you don't have that in the men's game. You do have that as well. But like you say, they've sort of grown up in those environments. They've seen it, even if they've not sort of played for a team, they'll have played football at school or whatever, they've had more opportunities. That was a massive thing I noticed. And even things like not understanding what like training is and what sort of training sessions look like and things. That was what I found. And I think you're so right. People think it's because the women and that tag gets thrown around, which is just ridiculous. It's not. It's because they've not had the same opportunity or upbringing like you're saying there.
Yeah.
So I find that fascinating.
You know, I think about my own, you know, experiences in coaching, and I've been at certain contexts in the past where we'd be coaching a team primarily full of boys, and then we'd have, you know, one or two girls come to join in, and coaches I'd be working under, they'd always be, you know, they'd always act really differently towards the girls. They'd, you know, almost treat them differently. You know, always just a bit of awkwardness. And I always used to think, the players, you know, but why would you treat them differently, whether they're a boy or a girl? The football players. So let's treat them as football players. So, you know, have you ever had anything like that? Any experiences like that?
So when I played for Edwardton Boys, I had kind of the first main manager, and there was an assistant manager as well. And the main manager was the loveliest guy. I mean, he was really supportive of me, loved me as a player, and really helped me develop my game. But the way I was treated with him was very different to the way the assistant manager treated me. I mean, the guy that I really liked said to me, you know, when I had to leave, he said, you know, when you play for England one day, give me a call. And that's one thing I still want to achieve and be able to give him that call one day. But I'd still like to speak to him now or bump into him and say, look where I've got. I've got to where I said I would. So, yeah, he was always lovely.
Well, the assistant manager, I found, did. I don't think he was as much a fan of me being there as the other manager. And I don't know if it was a part because of his son. His son was in the team, and I don't know. I don't know what it was, but it was noticeable. And I remember watching my dad have a conversation with him and stuff, because they had conflicting ideas of what I should do on the pitch and things. I remember my dad saying, she's a kid playing on the boys' team, it doesn't make a difference. But so I did have conflicting feelings towards two different managers.
Yeah.
But again, as a kid, you're resilient. And I thought, oh, well, at the time. And now I think it's just really not very good. I mean, I've even had friends that have said, when they've joined boys teams and stuff, it's like, you know, they've told the boys you can't score until you pass two or three times and stuff like that. I never experienced that, but I thought, like, that actually happens.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is just baffling.
Grateful.
And, you know, even when I got to secondary school, the teachers, I mean, I remember even in GCSE, I took PE, and one of the subjects, there was two girls in my year that played football, me and another girl, she's very good. And we both took the football part of the sports GCSE, and obviously there was like 25 boys and us two girls, and the coach was just so outright sexist about it and stuff, you know, we bought your shin pads, you know, that kind of thing. And we got rated higher than every boy, and to be fair to him, at the end he was like, you are the best two players here, which was a nice thing to hear. But for weeks it had been, you know, like a pre-idea that you're not going to be as good, you know. Do you really need the separate changing room? Well, yes, that kind of thing. And it just wasn't a thing, because we didn't even have a girls' secondary school team past year seven, and I loved it.
Yeah.
But there wasn't enough interest. That, you know, it just really shows the difference nowadays. And I'm looking at my old school and thinking, they're winning all these tournaments and stuff, and I just didn't get the opportunity past year seven. So it's nice to see that it's changed, but it's awful that, you know, even a few years ago it was like that.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, you know, it is. So you sort of hear things like that and you just think, really? You know, was that not common? But, you know, like you say, it was what it was, and it's changed now. And you know, I suppose, you know, you now as a professional footballer, those experiences probably benefited, you know, like taking criticism and hearing in the professional game now. So, yeah, I mean, what always really fascinates me, Beth, is that, you know, we know it sort of playing... Sorry, when you were young... when you're a young female player and you're playing in junior football or academy football or whatever, at some point you do have to transition through if you're playing for an all-boys team. And, you know, I don't think it happens as much now because there's more opportunity for girls. I certainly know there's a lot in my area now of Sheffield. But what was that like? And I know we briefly spoke, but in terms of, you know, like the game, the environment, the, I suppose, how you were coached, what were the similarities and differences there? I'd be really fascinated to hear.
I don't remember at that age thinking or noticing too much of a difference in the coaching. I'm very big on it's the same job no matter what gender. However, the environment itself, I think, did change because it is an entirely different gender, and you do go through things other girls do that boys just don't understand because they don't go through it. So there was a change, and it was nice to feel like, although I felt like part of it with the boys, you don't feel entirely because you just aren't the same.
Yeah.
And so going to the girls team and stuff, no matter what level that was, I just really enjoyed being there because there was like-minded females like myself.
So at one point, we did get the opportunity to have a couple of older players down when I played for the West Pritchard girls team. To be honest, it was probably one of the only times I got the opportunity as a child. So it was actually really exciting to see an older player. There was two of them actually that played and sort of have someone to look up to as a little girl playing football.
I still remember them, and it just shows like what visibility does for young girls and seeing people that have grown up playing, which that helped too, because obviously there was no girls or women in coaching for boys football. Right. And I've still not actually seen that. Yeah. So it was, there was a change for sure, yeah.
So, you know, sort of playing in the boys' game when you were younger, did you think that changed how you played when you entered the women's game? And did you think it made you a different player? Do you think it maybe made you a better player? Were you stronger in some areas but not in others? There's often labelled, isn't it, that because of the physical demands, it sometimes is a bit slightly different in the changes. So, you know, did you think that might have benefited your game in any way?
I don't think much prepares you for the difference in senior football, whether that be from boys to men's or girls to women's, because it is just so different.
But I think initially going into the girls' game, like I said before, I think you're right in saying the physicality was probably very good for me because the boys had grown up watching. I didn't have many friends in the girls' team that watched it as frequently as boys. I did some. But so boys have been more exposed to seeing how men challenge. So I did fit into that quite well. I went up to the girls' team. That I could see a difference in that because they'd never been taught that. They'd never been, you know, it was basics are taught, but, you know, 3 years later. So while it was brilliant and stuff, that was the noticeable difference, I think. Like you said, not because they were boys, but because they had more exposure to it. Yeah, so that's what I'd say.
Yeah, I mean that's fascinating because, you know, the senior version of the women's game is crazy physical, but, you know, I don't know if this is, you know, I think this is again often labelled that because, oh, it's girls playing and girls are nice and girls don't want to fight each other and all that stupid stuff that's tagged around. And I sometimes see this as well with coaches that sometimes when I see them sort of coaching girls, they're more likely to like stop if someone's doing a shoulder barge, particularly when it's like, you know, under 11s, under 12s, whatever. And I just, again, think, but they're playing football. But that really fascinates me because the senior game is really physical. But even now, you know, I see a lot of junior games in women's football and it's not always as sort of, you know, the sort of things you pick up, I guess, like what you're saying in the boys' game. So, you know, I suppose for some of your peers that you might have seen that maybe just played in the women's game, was that a hard transition from then? Was for you, it was kind of just the norm?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been big on train the way that you play.
To be honest, ironically, although I did gain a lot of physicality from playing boys' football, and I could translate that onto the pitch in girls' football, as I got older, physicality in the women's game was something I actually had to work on quite a lot.
So it kind of just backs up the physicality from a child didn't translate into it as a woman. But now I've really worked on that and I always go out to impress and train the way you play. And even in Bulgaria, it wasn't like that. Whereas, you know, I left the National League side, Burton Albion, and it was very much train as you play. And went over there and it wasn't at all. And it was literally like no injuries, not much contact, that kind of thing. So I've seen some horrendous injuries more so than boys football when I watch. So yeah, I think some people I know did the transition to playing like that in training and stuff because they'd always been taught by coaches to be that little bit softer in training and stuff. So it did make a difference when they came to the pitch. And I know some very good players growing up that were just really shy going into challenges. And I just thought, this is because you've been taught that way. Yeah. So there is massively a difference, even if it's not a conscious one, with the way girls are taught compared to boys.
Yeah, 100%. I've had a lot of conversation. I've obviously transitioned from the men's game, being a male myself. And I had a lot of conversation when I first transitioned and people would say, you know, it's not as physical, so you don't need to teach them as much physicality or, you know, it's not as quick, so you don't have to work on sprinting or things like that. But to me, it's the same game of football. Why wouldn't you? It might look differently. You know, obviously, demands are different. We know that. You might say the tactical demands are different. But everything else is exactly the same.
You're right. I mean, I think one thing I've definitely noticed, either watching coaches coach or kind of being around them or something, is kind of the willingness for coaches to stop and start and pause training sessions or little games when there's been a bit of a bump or, you know, like a shoulder barge and stuff. Which isn't quite the same when it translates across to the same age in boys' football. And I don't know if it's kind of the internalised sort of idea that girls might not want to be bumped as hard or kind of more as physical as boys, but, you know, it doesn't really make sense because as you grow older, That's all the women's game is, you know, equally as rough.
Yeah, it's one thing I'd mention is that what people don't and can't grasp or don't want to grasp is that yes, it's a slower game. We accept that. But I can do every skill the same and it doesn't make a difference because I'm a woman. But we're doing the same thing and that's to my maximum, just like a guy is to their maximum. So, you know, we're working at the same rate. We're not working less hard. We're not, you know, yeah, it's slower and maybe less physical, but it's still at the height of my demands. So, people struggle to really actually grasp that or they don't want to. I think that's the point to make. But, you know, I get a lot of comments on Twitter and things. People just don't like that I play football. Men just, some guys, they just don't like that girls play football. It's absolutely bizarre.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Hi, I'm Ethan Holmshaw, Director and Head Coach of the Holmshaw Academy. The Holmshaw Academy is a new football academy offering performance football coaching to football players aged 8 and upwards. All being well, we are projecting to open our first centre in Leeds after this national lockdown. The Holmshaw Academy was founded with the purpose to create all-rounded football players by delivering sessions that encourage creativity and adaptability. What I feel makes us different to any other football academy out there is that myself and my brother Sam Holmshaw are students of sports coaching. This means that we are research-based practitioners in coaching. At the Holmshaw Academy, we implement this into our coaching sessions to create an environment that aims to optimise player development, ignoring the traditional coaching approaches you may have observed in the past. We feel this sets us apart from other football academies out there. With over 30 years coaching experience collectively in grassroots, amateur and academy football, we look to use our experience from both our practical and academic background to challenge traditional coaching methods in the UK and help develop football players to achieve their true potential. For more information, follow us on our Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our Twitter is @Holmshaw Academy, our Facebook is The Holmshaw Academy and our Instagram is @the_Holmshaw_Academy. You can also find out more information at our website, theholmshawacademy.wordpress.com.
So yeah, I mean, I think this leads us on very nicely to our second segment, or should I say third segment on the podcast today. So, spoken about, you know, coming up in sort of playing in all boys teams, the tradition to the women's game. But what really also, you know, I just find fascinating about the women's game is that there is obviously a lot of female coaches, not enough in my opinion, and there's a lot of male coaches in the women's game. But yet, in the men's game, you might see one or two female coaches at grassroots, I have. But at the senior levels, the top levels, you rarely see that. So, you know, and we'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, from a player's experience, yourself, you know, I suppose you know, coming up throughout your career, have you had lots of experiences of having male coaches and female coaches, it being more one or the other? I'd be really interested to hear your journey through that.
So for every team that I've played for, the main coach has always been a man. I haven't had as many experiences with female coaches as men, which falls in line with most clubs and most managers nowadays anyway, although it's changing. I mean, I have had some experiences with some amazing female coaches, though. An example would be when I was about 17, I got the opportunity to trial for Spurs when I think Karen Hills is the name, was manager of Spurs Women. And I went to trial for the first team and very, very tough experience, but an amazing one. It was an all-day thing. And that was kind of my first proper taster of professional elite female coach, which I actually really, really enjoyed. And I think the difference is that there's a sense of kind of relatability there. She understands more what it's like to be female in the world and in sport. And I think that's what I took away from it the most. You know, it was a difference and I felt sort of proud. Like it was a really nice thing. Yeah. You know, like you're doing something I'd love to do. This is something I've not really seen. And like, I was just thriving in the environment. It was really nice to see. And I've had, you know, a couple of development team coaches that have been women and stuff, but they've never been mine. So I've had more male coaches than female, but definitely loved having female as, you know, as much as the men, there's, you know. But I mean, one thing I will say is, you know, throughout lockdown, I've been doing a few Q&As on Zoom with some younger teams, which has been really nice. And even the male managers, one notably said to me, you know, thank you so much for doing that, because they will have got more out of an hour and a half of you than they have all season. And I thought that was really a nice way to sort of sum it up. Female to female, the same as male to male, you do have more of a relatability. So that's one thing I'll put my finger on. But I have, in my experience, had more male than female coaches.
Yeah.
Which is like most people my age, to be honest.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that word relatedness is really interesting. I mean, that's a concept of motivation. So if you feel related, or the more you feel related to someone, you're more likely to be motivated. So if it's your manager, yeah, if you feel more related to them, you're more likely to feel motivated to perform for them or play for them. So that's really interesting. So, you know, in your experiences, if it's, you know, so when you've played and it's been a male manager, has that been a male backroom staff, or has it included females as well? That'd be interesting for me to find out.
At Burton, we had a lot of backroom staff that were women, which was nice. And as far as I can remember, all my other teams have been solely men, to be honest. At Knox County, we did have a development team manager that was a woman for a while. And, you know, people are working behind the scenes. So I think, which actually just, I've not thought about it before. I mean, my last two clubs have been really good for that, whereas before, which highlights the difference actually. I mean, even in Pirin in Bulgaria, our assistant manager was a woman, and she was actually on the team as well. She could play if she wanted to, which is actually interesting how it's like a worldwide thing now. You know, I actually experienced more equality in Bulgaria in a small little classic town of Bulgaria than I have in every club in England, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean that's fascinating, because when I first stepped into the women's game, it was me and my younger brother, who's also a coach, who was the assistant manager, and I was always very conscious of that. I was always very conscious that, I mean, I've always been quite an open person, and I'm always one to say to my players, look, if you ever need anything, you know, please come and see me, please let me know, and please drop us a phone call. And, you know, players would certainly do that. But when we then bought a assistant coach who was a female herself, we found that they would then go in any other problems that they probably didn't think that we'd understand. So things like the menstrual cycle, for example, that initially as males, you know, you're aware of what it is, but you don't actually have too much information of how that might affect the play. Yeah. They would go to that coach. And so, you know, when I went into Oakley Town, something that was really big on my mind was, if we're going to have, you know, a male manager and a male assistant manager, we need to make sure we've got three or four coaches that are females.
Yeah.
That relatedness as well. And I, you know, from what I've been told and what I'm hearing at the minute, that certainly helped in terms of those lines of communication. And if some of those youngsters are having problems, they feel more comfortable at times to go to a female. So, you know, would that be fair to say from some of your experiences as well, that might be yourself or your teammates?
Yeah, I think it's definitely true. I mean, recently I actually watched, I don't know if you saw it, there was, I think potentially BBC did like a string of documentaries on like Rebecca Adlington and Judy Murray, people in sport, and Rebecca Adlington actually focused on it a lot. She had a male coach, and, you know, and she was speaking about, you know, menstrual cycle and how things do affect things, and how it's sort of still a taboo subject and things like that. So definitely, I mean, it's brilliant that obviously you're in the female team, you talk openly about everything anyway, but it is nice to have the female aspect of it. If you have a female coach and stuff, you do feel more comfortable, because it's not, in my experience, it's not from the girls' side feel so much uncomfortable talking to the male coach. Sometimes it's like, how will the male coach perceive that? And then there's the line of boundary, what does the coach want to hear, and what does, you know, and sometimes, I mean, it shouldn't be that way, but it is. So, you know, woman to woman, you're always like that, there is no issue, because you just go through the same thing. So I do agree with you. It is, it's a really nice thing to hear about coaches, like encouraging female coaches alongside and stuff. It's a nice thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it again goes back to that. you know, concepts of relatedness, and that's fascinating. You know, sometimes I probably think, well, why don't they just come up and talk to me if I've ever been in this situation? And I have once or twice, but that's really interesting of all, well, what are they going to say? And I think particularly things like with the menstrual cycle, for example, that's just one that comes to mind. Because it's a male coach who doesn't go through that, then maybe there's that, oh, well, what are they going to say then? Do they know what's going on here? And you know, and for me personally, I've studied it, learned, because I felt that was important for the role. But I also know a lot of male coaches that haven't even thought about that.
Not
so much that it's a problem, but I think when we're thinking about, you know, coaching implications, and I speak to a lot of male coaches involved in the women's game, I think that's something that really needs to be considered.
Yeah.
That aspect of relatedness. And surely as well, I'll ask you, if there's been some female coaches in the background or backroom staff, when you were playing for teams that had backroom staff with female coaches in, or sorry, just female backroom staff, would you then, reflecting on that now, did you feel more comfortable in that environment? Or was it more just, if you knew that you might have had a problem that you needed to talk to someone, you might have felt a bit more comfortable then? Do you know what I mean? Would that make a difference?
I think it does, but subconsciously. I haven't actually felt in an all-male environment, for coaching staff wise, I haven't felt uncomfortable. I would just probably subconsciously keep things more to myself, which can be argued is a problem. You know, it's better to be more open and stuff. That being said, I have always had, you know, majority of the time, male coaches that were very open and very honest and really would talk to you about anything. But again, like I mentioned before, it is also the choice of the woman on the team and stuff. You know, how will it be responded to? How much do they really know? Is it going to fall on deaf ears? That kind of thing. Not through choice, but because they haven't researched or that kind of thing. But it's one thing I do feel strongly about as well. Like you said, I do feel there should be more taught or more exposure to it. I just think, you know, half the population goes through something, the other half doesn't, and it's just, I think it's, you know, owe it to the other half to understand more, because, you know, we live alongside each other and things. And I think it's a big issue in sport. I mean, particularly for coaches understanding injuries. I mean, whole ACL problems, and now it's being links, and I've read studies and things about the link between the cycle and that, and, you know, Chelsea women are now, and England women are now, you know, training around them, and it's really interesting, and I just think it's definitely beneficial to know more about.
I mean, 100%, because again, you know, and I'm sure my coach won't mind me saying, a lass called Georgia, who's our positional coach, she actually did a CPD workshop about what you were just saying there, and it was also linked with her experiences. She's had an ACL herself that she's going through.
Yeah.
And that is so beneficial to me, because again, you know, you're constantly trying to learn, you know, learn as much as you can about what you need to know about your players and all that sort of thing, as a coach should. But there's still little things like that I never actually realised that. Actually thought about that. And that is, again, you know, and I know we're going to talk about this in the next segment, but for me, that is so important for a coach. And I think a lot of male coaches probably don't realise that. You know, I mean, myself at times, acting like you would with males. And sometimes you've got to recognise that, no, there might be something else going on here that you...
Yeah.
And I think that sort of demonstrates the importance of, you know, for me, certainly having female coaches on the backroom staff has really helped me in that regard. So yeah, fascinating. So I suppose, and it's a bit of a difficult question to ask you, because you've said you've had more male coaches than you have female coaches in terms of the head coach and everything. But is there a preference? Does that, you know, is that a thing? Is it player to player? Do players prefer a female coach at the top, because that's kind of, I guess, like the role model? So you were saying, you know, Karen at Spurs, that was amazing for you. But maybe that, even though it's still amazing when you're having male coaches at the top, but that was someone to look to, thinking, wow, you know, look what she's doing. Is that a difference? I mean, I'd be fascinated to hear, you know, your thoughts on that.
I wouldn't say I have a preference. in my opinion, for what I've gone through, I wouldn't say it would be fair to do that, a judgment, because, I mean, like, you know, there's been lots of talk recently with Emma Hayes being linked to the AFC Wimbledon jump, that kind of thing. I'm very big on kind of success is not defined by gender. I think it's the same job. I think you have to have the same skills, teach the same tactics, stuff like that. So I personally don't have a preference because, I mean, without the guys that have coached me, I wouldn't be where I am. So I owe it to them, but I also owe it to the women role models as well, that they've guided me more so in the sense of a role model. So you're right in that. One thing I would say is I'd love to see more women, and I'd love to have a female coach, and there will be differences, and I appreciate the differences, but I probably wouldn't say, you know, I want a woman coach, because I don't think a man can't deliver something, you know. I mean, it might vary from player to player, but again, I couldn't think of anyone off the top of my head that would probably say, I want a female coach or I want a male. I don't think it matters too much as long as they're a good coach.
It certainly is. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? You know, people, you know, I guess forget it's the cultural, isn't it, that the men's game came first, the women's game, you know, came a lot after and it's took massive strides. And I suppose that's why it's more of a male-dominated industry on the coaching front. You know, it's certainly something I've explored, but I think, like you say, that is certainly changing now. I know there's a load of female coaches I know that are involved in the women's game and doing a great job. So, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I actually read a study around that, and I actually had a lass called Taylor Wilkinson who's involved in netball. She came on the podcast two seasons back, and she was talking about her sort of research into this women coaching. And it's interesting because a lot of players generally don't even think about it. They don't.
Yeah.
Sort of have, like you say, subconsciously, because to them it's just the norm.
Yeah,
it's just come up with, it's just the experiences, you know. And if they had experienced all female coaches coming through, then they might have a particular say. But yeah, I think it's fascinating. And what always frustrates me in a way is, as you know, you think about business, there's always females at the top, you know, chairman, CEOs, whatever. But yet in football, the males game, we still seem to be struggling.
Yeah.
And I think it was 2014, it was the manager of the French national women's team now, and I completely forget the name, Corianne, I think her name is, but she went into Clermont Foot, and I thought then, fantastic, finally. Because I exactly the same as you, it's a role, it doesn't matter
you
know, where you're from and all that sort of, you know, malarkey that comes with it, but it never seemed to kick on. From that, and I see it in other sports, but I just think I can't wait for that day. So yeah, fantastic, Beth.
The Sports Coaching Podcast with Sam Holmshaw.
Hi, Peter Prickett, author of Developing Skill and Developing Skill 2 here, invading Sam's brilliant podcast to tell you about my new book, Football's Principles of Play. Most books include the principles of play as part of a broader whole or focus on the individual principles of megastar coaches. None focus on the core principles themselves. That's why I wrote this book for football fans and coaches alike. You can buy it by visiting developingskill.com. That's Football's Principles of Play at developingskill.com.
I think this very nicely then leads us on to our final segment. So we always finish on this podcast, implications of coaching practice. So, you know, I get obviously a lot of coaches listening to this. I think it's important for them to hear a player's insight in terms of what are things that they should bear in mind. So, you know, and I suppose a few points we've gone over already, but why is it important, firstly, to be aware of who you're coaching? So we've spoken there about male coaches and players might not feel as related to this. So for the male coach in the women's game, why is it important for them to recognise that, to maybe recognise why they need to go and learn more about the menstrual cycle, for example, or maybe have a couple of female coaches on board? You know, is that important for you?
Yeah, very to me. I think, like you said, it might not be something through no fault of their own. It's just society that they've even thought about. But one way that I always like to think that changes people's minds a little bit is like think of the benefit you would get as a coach from it. Your players are more likely to trust you to open up. There's a better understanding, because I mean there is a general consensus of understanding with among girls compared to boys in life anyway, that because we go through such different things, that you know, some of them haven't got a clue. And it's like, how far does that translate into coaching as men? Because men of the same age don't have a clue or don't like speaking about it, whereas it's really part of the job. I mean, I saw something recently and it's just really true. I mean, as women, we're expected to go through normal life and not change the way we behave or act, what things go on in the background that we have to suppress or ignore. And it's nice to be in an environment where it's sort of spoken about, or there's a level of understanding, even if it doesn't have to be spoken about a lot. So yeah, I'd say it's very important, because there are things people go through. I mean, the same with you know, mental health and stuff. You could be a men's manager running a boys team, and it's exactly the same thing. A boy could be not speaking about something he feels. I mean, there are, you know, with menstrual cycle, there's, you know, some things girls go through and that can link to anxiety and depression and things like that. And it's a mental health spin on it as well. And the way that you want to understand the boy that plays for your team, you know, it makes sense to understand the girls that do as well. And it does, it brings you closer as on like a friendship level as well. There needs to be a level of that as you grow older into the female game. So,
yeah, 100%. I think you're so right. You know, I know we've mentioned the menstrual cycle a lot, but other areas as well.
Yeah.
There seems to be a stigma within that. And a lot of male coaches often don't like talking about that. And I completely agree with you there. I think if you're, you know, one, that's part of the role, so you need to understand that. Two, you need to be open about it, because, you know, you're primarily, a part of your role is being there for your players and caring for your players. But three, I think you're so right. If the coach is open to that, and even maybe holds their hand up, and I think that's a lot of it with male coaches, probably the fear of, well, I don't want to say something because I've not gone through this and I'm not quite sure what this means and all that. But actually, if you're open and you make that environment where it's open to talk about that and all this sort of thing, then, like you said, the players are surely more respectful of that and actually are more appreciative. And then surely that links in more with the coach-athlete relationship, would you say?
Yeah. And I think it enables the player to flourish that bit more. You know, I've had games where, I mean, I struggle terribly with pain and stuff, and where my manager hasn't got a clue. And it's an environment where I've decided not to, and other players have decided not to speak about it because it's either just not going to be beneficial. We know the guy well enough to know that it's just not on the cards. Whereas probably if it was a woman or a guy that I know is quite up on the topic, I would be like, this is happening and I'm struggling. But I mean, one thing that I've always like, I love the thought of every girls and women's team, maybe from a certain age or something, having the ability or the accessibility to go on some sort of course, or a woman to come in and sort of deliver some sort of course about it. So even if the guy, because you mentioned, and it's a very valid point, that a man might not feel it's his place to bring that up, and might not be comfortable, and that's fair enough, but it might be easier for someone else to open that topic up. And it'd be nice to learn about that from a younger age as well, and maybe, because it's a big thing in women's sport, so that's like a nice thought of something to happen as well eventually, to have accessibility to courses and things to teach and open the conversation. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting point to mention.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, and you know, that's what's often dominated with the you know, coaching courses, CPD events, because the men's game is bigger traditionally. Everything's always dominated by the men's game. So you know, when you go on a coaching course, if you're, you know, a female or a male, there's never the question of, are you in the men's or the women's? And really then it should be, oh, you're in the women's, so this is what you need to know. You're in the men's. This is and it's treated as the same, and it is the same sport, but there are differences that like you say, that are really important to consider. So for me, that is such an important message, that people are aware of that. And at the end of the day, you know, I'd hate to think, you know, like you were saying there, you're maybe going through an injury, but you don't want to discuss it with a coach. For me, that's the coach needs to be more supportive there then, and let you know, okay, I don't know, I've not been there myself, I've not gone through that, and, you know, maybe we don't have that related this there, but still, we need to be open and give you and let you feel comfortable enough to do that. So I think that's another important message as well. And I suppose the final question would be just being aware of players' backgrounds. I think, you know, and I know we've only briefly discussed that, but I think sometimes, and I think it's changing now, but I think traditionally in coaching, coaches would kind of just treat the team as the team and never really look at the individual. So, you know, for you, I suppose, again, from a player's perspective, how important is it the coach is aware of individual players and sort of their background, where they've come from, whether that's in the men's or women's game, in terms of where they've played in the youth, or just in general?
I think that's really important as well. I think it's important to acknowledge in life, again, but it's important in football to understand that backgrounds-wise, let's say, just as an example, I used to have a player that had to arrive to training from an hour away on a bus every day because they either can't afford a car or the parents are at work or they've been home alone all day. And it's difficult. And that kind of ties in with kind of, I don't want to use the word punishment, but I can't think of the word, you know, fines if late to training, yeah. Fines for this and that and the other. And whilst I do think there needs to be, you know, rules set out for each club, I think it's important. There does need to be a level of understanding about backgrounds. And also, again, that opens up the conversation that maybe if a player is struggling mental health, money-wise, relationships, family, that someone's open enough to say, I'm going through this. This is why I'm not on form, or this is why I'm not at training today. Because I have had those experiences where players have been treated the same when it really shouldn't have been that, or players have been treated differently when, you know, it's getting the fine line between treating people equally but understanding the difference in people. And I think that needs to be carried out in life as well, because people, you know, personalities are different. You're introvert, you're extrovert. People go through stuff that they carry that you don't know about. So definitely, I think being a good coach comes with being a good person.
Yeah.
And I find the best people that I've known as coaches are just the most likeable people. I mean, someone I'll say recently, I think you know him, you had him on recently, you know, Rich Allen.
Yeah.
So I do coaching with him and Jonas from that. And they're classic examples of just good people that are very good coaches. And I know I can speak to them and drop them a message about anything. And I think that's like a really good example of how people and coaches should be. And I'm thankful to have had that with most coaches, but there are some that stick out. And I think, you know, I'm not a coach myself, but you can work on this, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was an important point to mention.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think that's that traditional approach, isn't it, of one size fits all. Well, you're so right. You actually have to bear in mind, you know, I mean, I've been getting it myself, Beth, where, well, why is she late? She's been late 3 times in a row now. Kicking off here. But then you have to step back and go, oh, actually, no, let me communicate first before I do a bit of a telling off or whatever in front of the team. Or anything. Let me find out if there's something. And that's certainly something I've learned. And I think that's such an important message. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think that's something that coaches are beginning to learn and understand. I think, you know, for me, there's a lot of coaches that don't make it to the level, so they don't quite understand that it's the little things like that mean so much, you know, to like what you're saying there and so much to you personally, you know, to make you feel comfortable. So yeah, you know, fantastic. You know, I've got to say, I've really enjoyed this episode today, Beth. I don't know if there's anything else you want to just add it, any messages that for the listeners that might just be important to add. Don't worry if there's nothing else.
I think we've covered everything I wanted to say, to be honest. If I think of something in the next minute, I'll pop it in. But I think we've covered everything I wanted to say. It's been really good actually speaking on here. So
no, it's been a pleasure to have you on. I mean, I have to say it's been a fascinating insight for me personally. I'm sure it will be as well for a lot of the listeners. And I think we've covered some really, really important topics there, you know. Things like, you know, recognising relatedness, recognising backgrounds, recognising, you know, that sometimes that there could be some stumbling blocks and how we have to, you know, come over them. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's been absolutely fascinating, Beth. So, you know, for people listening to this podcast today, if they want to, you know, follow you, check out what you're doing on social media, maybe even get in touch and ask you some questions, you know, what would be the best way to find you on social media?
I am under the same at actually on both Instagram and Twitter, and I think I think you've actually tweeted me very recently, haven't you? So that's the easiest way to find that. And I'm very vocal on social media and things, actually, about football. I really enjoy, I like championing the quality, and I update my progress quite a lot. And I have a lot of people, even mums and dads of children I've coached before, that say, like, I follow you all the time, I follow what you're doing. So, you know, I really welcome people that are interested in my journey. And likewise, I'm always interested in any questions or talking to other people. It's one of my favourite things to do. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Love that. Well, I'll share that on our website when we put this podcast out. But Beth, it just leaves me to say thank you so much for agreeing to come on. It's been great to connect, great to chat to you and hear your experiences. And once again, thank you to everyone who's checked out the podcast today, whether it's your first time listening or you've been a fan for the podcast over the last 8 months or so. If you like the podcast, please do leave us a review on any of our platforms. You can check us out on YouTube now with our new YouTube channel. Beth, thank you so much to you. Thank you so much to all our listeners. And we will see you all next week.